It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Yeah, and as you can probably tell, we are both in the studio this morning, and it's kind of wet, but very nice, pleasant Saturday, the 10th of September, which means one thing to me more than anything. 21 years ago today was the last normal day in America.
Yep, in our adult lives anyway, that is true. It is, that 20 years went by really fast.
Didn't it, though? And one other thing that I observe, and I'm sure a lot of you will too, that now, after a mere 21 years, we are at least as polarized as we were 21 years ago today.
I would say way more so.
Yeah. So, did we learn enough from it? No, we didn't. But never forget. All right. For those of you who are regulars, welcome back. We appreciate you guys because you're the reason we always do this. If you're new to the show, just found it by happenstance, or if we told you about it, or a friend, then stick around for the hour. Promise you that you will learn something. It may or may not be helpful forever, but hey, knowing more is better than knowing less. I probably have a million old expressions, one for any occasion, but one of my favorites is, interesting people know a lot about a little, and a little about a lot. So if you can't carry on a conversation that makes some sense on virtually any topic, you're not going to be very interesting.
I don't think you have a million. You have about 100. You just repeat them a lot.
They're all new to me. I'm in my 70s. Oh, well. Anyway, I'm going to tell you, as you probably heard if you hung over from Howard, that the market did have a good week, and I'm also going to tell you why. Me. I claim the credit because it was exactly 1 week ago today I told you I was going to fix it. I diagnosed the problem, said what this market can't take is a five-day week, so I am going to make it a four-day week next week, and we'll do fine. We had a four-day week, and it's up. So you can thank me now, or you can thank me later.
Yeah.
Or, I guess there's a third option, not at all.
Yeah, that's not really how I saw it, but it was a good week.
It was
a Labor Day shortened week. Four trading days only, and it didn't start out that well. All three indexes actually declined on Tuesday, but the last 3 days more than made up for it. In fact, it erased the losses from last week, created a higher low on the charts than we saw in August, so that's a decent sign. We're still in a long-term downtrend, but it's encouraging when you're making higher lows rather than lower lows. That's typically an okay sign for the future. The 3 days of buying also made September for the month turn positive, and we're still positive for the quarter. So the year doesn't look as good, but it was definitely a step in the right direction. And it was a strong week. We saw the Dow up 2.7%, the S&P up 3.6%, and the NASDAQ 4.1%. So no complaints there. Despite a painful first half of the year, investor sentiment towards a year from now is still at an all-time low, according to the Yale School of Management.
And that, by the way, is a very positive thing.
Well, I'm getting there.
I figured you would.
The survey breaks down the responses by individual and institutional investors. Well, individual investors are at bearish at levels we haven't seen before. Institutional investors are actually getting more bullish as the market has traded lower. And this is the widest spread that there has ever been between the two. So it's unusual to see such disparity between what the common investor thinks and what professional investors think.
And who has more clout?
Correct. I think it's a pretty good sign, actually, that we are seeing some buying, and institutional investors are thinking it's a good time to get in, and individuals are not. That, to me, is a pretty good setup. It's actually one of the more encouraging things that I've seen in quite a while. So I'm not going to say I'm bullish on the market, but I'm definitely more so than I was last week.
We need a breakout moment.
Yep.
We need to punch something, preferably the S&P 500. We need to punch through its prior high. and get us back on track.
That, well, we just need to punch through the downtrend line, but not the prior high. That would be a long way.
You can't
way
do one
from
without
that.
The other.
Right,
so.
Right. But if we did get through that trend line, I would be very encouraged at that point.
Yep.
And if you need more proof that individual investors get it wrong, the widest the spread has ever been in the other direction, meaning individual investors were bullish and institutional investors were bearish, was back in February of 2021. And you might think back in 2021 was a pretty good year. What was happening in February? That was actually the height of the meme mania, where these meme stocks, like the most recent one was Bed Bath & Beyond, and it was AMC, I think, back at that time. It marked the peak of panic buying for those things right before they absolutely crashed. So that's how wrong, once again, the individual investors were back in February 2021.
You can't just wish to make it so, huh?
You cannot. And piling on when you see a trend usually means that trend is about to reverse.
Well,
so,
you know the old saying, he said, speaking of old sayings, first the CEO does his buying or selling, then he tells the president, who tells the vice presidents, and when all of those trades are settled, then they leak it out to you and me and the rest of the world.
Right.
And the followers that follow will just make it worse.
This survey also asks investors how they feel about current valuations, and both institutional and individual investors are getting more comfortable with valuations, although much more so on the institutional side, meaning that as the market has fallen and price-to-earnings ratios have gone lower, people are thinking that looks more and more like a good deal than it did 6 to 8 months ago.
Hey, I got one for you. Have you heard yet an optimistic report on the holiday sales coming up?
No, I haven't heard anything yet.
I heard my first one, and it was optimistic. And this goes, Adam and I have been talking about this for decades, about every single year. Oh, it's going to be a horrible holiday season, horrible, horrible, gloom and doom and woe is me. And then they start adding it up in January, and they say, oh, well, actually, it was pretty good.
Yeah, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to me that the first one I've seen anyway, came out, and they're thinking this can be really good.
Yeah, well, just wait. That'll change.
That's why I'm kind of afraid of
there's it. Going to be doom and gloom about this holiday season for the next 3 months.
Well, if you
I guarantee it.
Yeah, do it in nominal dollars, maybe it'll be great.
Does anyone out there think that inflation has started to ease? Well, if you do, you're not alone. Google searches for inflation have plummeted in the last month. On top of that, there's actually quite a few indications that inflation has peaked. The used vehicle index is coming down, and it's coming down rather sharply. The national rent index is coming down pretty sharply. The UN World Food Index is trending lower. Gasoline prices have fallen. Shipping rates are falling. And we're seeing the ISM reports prices paid index coming down as well. All of those things, one of those things could just be a blip in the data, but all of them moving together certainly would indicate that it seems inflation has peaked. I hope the Fed is looking at all those same charts. I know they have access to them. If I can draw that conclusion, I think they can too. I'm giving them too much credit.
It's going to have an impact on the Social Security increase this year, because that's computed as of the end of September. And if it keeps adjusting downward somewhat between now and the end of September, that 9 or 10 or even 8.5% might not be reached. I got some more to say about that a little later on too, but we need to take our first break and pay some bills. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have our trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Well, one of the chief problems that we all know, and it's not just an American problem these days, it's an around-the-world problem, is cost of energy. And right now, as we speak, 1 in 6 Americans is late paying their energy bills. And it's worse than that, even. There are a bunch of Americans who have spent at least one of the last 12 months inside their house with temperatures either being dangerous or uncomfortable. At least a month. What percentage of Americans claim to have spent at least one out of the past 12 months with a house that they can't afford to put to a good temperature, so it's either dangerous or just uncomfortable? It's just a whole number percentage between 0 and 100. You get, already got a bracket. Good at that. Okay, what's new and exciting this week? Anything else to wrap up on the...
Yeah, I had another interesting one. Another web-based statistic. It showed that Google searches for sell my car skyrocketed 222% to the highest level in history in September.
Really?
Yeah. It's currently running at three times the normal level. The leading states where you're seeing this are Michigan, Arizona, and California. And it leads you to believe a couple of things. One, it seems like an odd time when gas prices are actually coming down. So is that a trailing indicator? Because gas prices did reach an all-time high this summer. And also, I think
88 straight days coming down now.
If you are in the market for a car, if you can just hold on a few more months, you are going to get a much better deal than you will today.
Yep.
Because you wouldn't see this type of activity unless things were about to, used cars were about to, I don't want to say flood the market, but there's going to be a lot more available than what there was.
Yeah, and look at the new market, too. There have been literally tens of thousands of cars in parking lots that can't be sold for want of a semiconductor or two or 10 or whatever. And as the last week, we talked about the number of ships waiting to get in and get offloaded in California has fallen from 109 to 9, mm-hmm. which means there's a lot of chips that are coming over. I don't think the tensions in Taiwan are good for the industry, but there's definitely reason to believe that more new cars are going to be coming on the market available to sale and to have right now. And as the used market falls, that'll take the pressure off of the new cars, where you couldn't even buy a new car for manufacturer's suggested retail price.
No, everything was over for a while
there. I don't think that's going to happen anymore.
No, I think that trend is on its way out. It's not something that's ever lasted for a long period of time in my adult life.
Yeah, I was listening to Howard and Angela about real estate on the way in, and the number of houses that are selling over asking price, that's down from like 29% to 19%.
Yeah, I heard that as well.
A pretty significant adjustment, and I think cars will move along that track right behind them. And that's good for everybody, let's face it, because manufacturing cars pays well, gets people working. It's just generally a good thing to support that kind of industry.
I saw that this is a funny headline related to what you were just talking about. Home prices across the U.S. make biggest drop in 11 years by as much as 4%, leaving hundreds of thousands of owners at risk of going underwater. And it's all on the West Coast. It's San Jose, Seattle, San Francisco, San Diego, L.A., and Denver seeing significant drops in value. I'm not tooting my own horn, but I did predict this. I said, I would not be as worried if you live in a place where people were moving to as if you lived in a place where people were leaving. I see a common thread, and though, except for Denver, that actually they gained population, I believe. But the first five cities I mentioned all lost population during the pandemic. So that kind of makes sense.
Very interesting. All right, I remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and you can give us a call with your financial questions, or if you just want to muse on a subject of the day or whatever, we are right here. Of course, the trivia question is out there, and you know the general rules. If you call in, we'll put you on if you want to. All right, you also know, if you've been listening to us for a long time, that I am eagerly following the progress of the so-called Secure 2.0 law that we're hoping to get passed this year. It's the one that would, among other things, increase the required minimum age for distributing from your retirement funds. From its current 72, it would go to either 73 or 75, and depending on the two suggestions or proposals out there, it would either go directly or more likely it'll take 11 years to do it. And the first one to 73 would start in this January. Well, on the progress on that front right now, The House version has already been done, and this week the Senate finalized their version. So now they've sent them into the committees to try to merge the two together, which means for those few minutes remaining that they're going to work the rest of this year, they're going to be trying to come up with a package that both sides like in here. And I find that the odds of that happening are extraordinary because the House version passed, again, with over 400 votes. Nothing is ever that popular in the House. And it's for a variety of reasons. It'll change the way a lot of people view their retirement plan. The annuity industry is really big on it because one of the things that it's going to change is it's going to make the annuities in your 401k a lot more available. And I have reservations about that. I don't think annuities are well enough understood, and I don't think they'll be presented to most people in a manner that allows them to make a really good choice about it. But the business itself, the annuity business, that is going to help us push this through, and hopefully then all the other good things will come out of it. And I'll keep up. Probably won't happen until November the way it looks, but when anything changes on there, you'll hear it here.
I don't know if this one's going anywhere, but there is another proposal in Congress from Representative Angie Craig to end the double taxation of income with Social Security benefits.
I have read that.
And I honestly, I don't know what the who's supporting, who's against it, but it is it would eliminate the taxation of on senior citizens who are collecting Social Security benefits. Right now, if you make a combined income of $25,000 or more, or in joint, that's single, or if you're a joint filer, $32,000 or more, you get taxed on some part of your benefits for Social Security. This would end that. That number has never been indexed for inflation since the 1980s when it was introduced, so that was a huge, well, I look at it as a mistake. The government probably did it on purpose.
It's a mistake, and it's... Yeah, in the eyes of the beholder, we'll say.
There's even 12 states that tax Social Security benefits, and that just seems wrong as well. There's a lot to like here. The problem is that leaves a big gap in revenue for the government that they're going to fill some other way.
She's covered it.
Yeah, and so we'll see how it all shakes out. I don't think that this current proposal is the one that will ultimately even get voted on, but it's nice to see that people are thinking about that, especially I think protecting seniors and retirees is probably should be the number one priority or close to it for the government. So things like these, at least some people are thinking about it in Washington.
A couple of salient points there. Probably the most obvious two forms of double taxation now are the tax on dividends received from corporations, because that's after-tax money. Then they send it to you as a shareholder, and you get taxed on it. That is a ludicrous double tax. And you could say that it's even worse than that when you deal with capital gains, because capital gains, you're also paying the capital gains tax on what is nothing more than inflation. And that is not counted in capital gains, although many proposals have tried to get it through, even since Reagan, and of course they never can because when you put it on paper, it gets kind of expensive to them. But another thing about this proposal, Angie Craig is a Democrat from Minnesota. Now, whenever I see a proposal that's from a Democrat in Minnesota, I got to step back and see what's going on here.
Yep. I agree. It's not where I would think it would come from either. No. But it,
although, in all fairness, Secure 2.0 has the two sides of each are bipartisan.
Yeah. So I'm not going to. A good idea is a good idea.
Yep.
I'm not going to shoot it down just because it came from the other side.
Yeah, well, this one would be funded for Representative Craig with people who make $400,000 and up. They would pay Social Security tax, FICA withholding tax on that amount all the way up to infinity, basically.
This one says it would require high earners to pay payroll taxes on income of $250,000 or more a year. I'm not sure. It's not clear to me if there's a gap, or there is a gap. Yeah, it's between 147 to 250.
I'm sorry, it wasn't 400. It was 250. Mm-hmm. But that won't pass because Joe Biden does want to pay it, and he makes $400,000. See, you always got to consider these things. But I'm glad to see somebody looking at it. I would love to see the double tax, at least the half of it that is double tax, because you did not get a deduction for your payroll taxes that you put in your whole life.
That's correct.
The corporation that supposedly matches it did. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. While 1 in 6 Americans is behind in their payments for energy, what percentage of Americans also, or I guess it's not also, but a related question, what percentage of Americans claim to have spent at least 1 month in the last 12 with their house not being at a comfortable temperature, where it would either be uncomfortable or even dangerous due to the high cost of energy? It's just a whole number between 1 and 100. We're talking on the break a little bit about where good ideas come from, and it's very seldom Congress. And a good idea doesn't mean that it has to be something that happens or that it's a just blatant good idea. A good idea is an idea worth talking about. Mm-hmm. And this Social Security proposal where they would begin again to tax the FICA on higher earners. And, of course, that gap will – eventually you're going to pay on everything. When the 147 current goes all the way up to 250, you're just going to keep on paying. But it's not so egregious on its face that it shouldn't be discussed. And I'm glad it is being discussed. And we will, of course, add to the discussion. But there's another one from a well-known college that came up that is also worth discussing, and Adam will – tell you a bit about that, and then we can talk about why it's interesting.
Definitely. I think this is a really timely discussion to have, too, because of what's going on with the announcement of the $10,000 up to $30,000, I think, or something like that. Forgiveness, we'll call it forgiveness, even though it's not really forgiveness on loans. That there's so many problems with that. One of the biggest ones is it incentivizes all the wrong behaviors. And it's there's no logical reason that it's a good idea. Just none. I don't see any good
idiot brought idea. It up in the campaign, and yep. Another idiot liked the idea and said he'd do it.
It just doesn't make any sense. It's not fair. It doesn't teach the right lessons. It doesn't incentivize the right behaviors. There's just a whole host of problems. Now, I like ideas that make you think about whether or not it's the right way to do things. So this one really stuck. It jumped off the page at me. Princeton, if you break down their annual tuition plus room and board, if you throw in a little bit of beer money, you're at $80,000 a year for all of that, which is
price of beer might be 81 by now.
Maybe 81. Yeah, it's absolutely insane to begin with. It's just so much money, but they apparently realize that, and they're doing something about it. They are now offering a full ride to students whose families earn less than $100,000, or if you are from a family that has multiple kids in college and earn up to $300,000. I'm not sure of the exact math on that, but you can make a good amount of money, and if you have multiple kids whose tuitions you're covering – they are offering a full ride, covering that full $80,000 a year. The total benefit package is well over $300,000 over a 4-year period, and it is it's expected that out of a student body of about 5,500, about 1,375 students will qualify. So, really interesting proposal. I think that for Princeton, A, it's great publicity. B, it's going to make applications skyrocket this year. Their acceptance rate might be the lowest in the U.S. this coming year based on this program. If I'm from a family who makes $80,000 a year and I've got a academically talented kid, I am 100% going to make them apply to Princeton if they were interested in the Ivy League.
Absolutely.
Versus going to one of the, Penn or one of the others. Now, if I'm from a wealthy family, I'm thinking, I'm not sure this is a great idea. How are they going to make up that revenue shortfall of 1,375 students not paying a dime?
They have a reluctance to dip into their endowments.
They do. I don't know if that, it doesn't specifically say that that's where this is coming from, but I'm thinking, okay, right now it's at 80. Is that going to go to 120 next year? Because that someone has to pay the difference. And I'm also wondering if other, especially Ivy League schools, are going to follow this and do the same thing, or if they're just going to see how it plays out at Princeton and then make a decision based on that. But the one thing's for sure, if I'm trying to make a decision between three Ivy Leagues and I'm smart enough to get into them, I'm going to go to the one that's going to give me a free ride versus the one that isn't. So pretty interesting social experiment here.
Yeah, and that, you know, there's so many aspects to it too. If somebody's successful coming out of there and gets into a good life, I guess, a productive life, and high earners, are they going to remember Princeton and send them money every year? And I would think there'd be a very strong likelihood.
Absolutely,
of that.
I would. I versus where I went, my private college, which hits me up for money, even though it was paid tuition for all 4 years.
Yeah, so University of Wisconsin still finds me periodically.
Of course,
but no good. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen.
What's cooking?
You tickled my fancy with that Princeton deal. Number one, so they're looking for some diversified minds to mush, you know, with their politics. Number two, I'm wondering what all the athletic coaches on campus are thinking, seeing as they can't do athletic scholarships, but, oh, I might find some people who qualify to get in that would like to come. And now I can get them to come play football or basketball or, you know, whatever from that standpoint. And, oh, by the way, I can get some NIL money for them. Oh, now we got a chance to compete with Yale and Harvard and kick their butt in football.
I mean, maybe. I could see it going that way for a very small percentage of the applicants. But this is also going to make it that much harder to get into Princeton because the applicant pool, I think, is going to be 5 to 10 times, maybe not that much, but it's going to be a lot larger than what it's been in the past few years.
And you can count on the fact that not all talent comes from rich families.
Are you naive enough to think that they strictly go by the numbers and the essays and those kind of things as to where they slot people?
Well, Marshall, of course they do that.
Well, to some degree.
he said, lying.
No, I don't. I actually think that they're way more, they look at that more than you might think. Those rankings that are put out by the independent, quote unquote, independent, like the, what is it, Newsweek and the other, I think there's another one. They mean everything to deans of colleges. You want to be ranked number one. I can't tell you when I was in grad school how much, I mean, it was preached to us every day. We need to get the best job because it reflects good on the school. And it is a big, big deal to be ranked in the top 10, in the top five. So, and that's, they use statistics to do that. So I would be hesitant to think that they would let in lesser candidates for reasons, because it would hurt them in those rankings.
And you also know that their diversity goals will be met whether they say it or not. I'm wondering if this will bring in it'll make it easier to achieve diversity goals because there's some really smart kids out there that don't make much money.
I think it is a good way to do that, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see it benefiting Princeton in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. It's a multi-dimensional discussion and therefore one worth having.
Well, you hit my funny bone with that. But really, when you compare the dichotomy against your question for today, $80,000 to go to school for a year.
Yep.
Oh, we might give a few people some money to do that. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to guess that there's 20% of the population that has missed a month of their utility bill because they couldn't afford it.
Marshall, you were kind of close because it was 19.9%.
Nice job.
We have a name for that kind of guess. Winner!
Oh, well, thank you. But it is sad, isn't it?
Yes, it is very sad. And that's one of the reasons I bring it up.
It is sad, but Princeton is offering these people a way to get a degree that could make sure that they never end up in that pool of people again. So, in a way, it's a way out.
It's a discussion that is self-perpetuating.
Mm-hmm.
And Marshall, I've got your address, so you don't even need to stay on hold.
Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate the call. Well, that's a pretty good guess, wasn't it? But it is, as he says, it's a crying shame. We live in a prosperous country where 20% of Americans are not able to keep their homes comfortable. And that is fixable. All right, don't go anywhere. One more break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we're just having a little chuckle in the background about Charlie Crist. I think it was a UNF poll that got him within two or three of DeSantis. Now, if you need a chuckle for the day, just gave you one. What can you say?
Just going to mention that DeSantis won when Democrats had a 200-something thousand voter advantage, and now it's flipped the other way, 200,000. I don't think this is going to go well for Charlie Crist.
All right, here's a little story from the Department of What Could Possibly Go Wrong. I didn't think he'd do it because he has very tall aspirations. But Gavin Newsom, the president of California, if you ask him, signed into law a bill that was on his desk that would have him appoint a board of people, not elect, appoint, who would dictate to fast food restaurants what they had to pay their employees. It is unfathomable to me that any governor would take that bill and do anything but what it deserved, which would be a paper shredder sitting next to his desk. But he signed it. So California has a $15 minimum wage that goes up to $15.50 on January 1. But all the McDonald's and so on now are going to have to pay $22 an hour to their employees. So I was musing this week that maybe the home of the first McDonald's will eventually become the home of the last McDonald's in California anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that, people? Dictating wages of your employees for a private business.
Not even by an elected official. It is a appointed board who... I doubt there's any requirement, have any knowledge of business or have ever run a business or made a payroll or even understands how.
You mean like Gavin Newsom?
Correct. Mm-hmm. At least he's elected, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I can, at least he's accountable every so often to the voters that put him there. This board is not accountable to anyone except whatever they want to do. It seems like they have complete autonomy and power to dictate to businesses what they should pay. And if I'm a business owner, I am never, ever opening a branch or a chain in California ever.
Under no circumstances.
I just don't. You'd have to be crazy to open a small business there.
Yep. And the article I read discussing the fact that this could happen said that this board really wants to bump it up sort of quickly over time to over $40 an hour. And in a related incident, I also read this morning that the robotic industry just had its third consecutive record year. As you know, anything in these places that can be done robotically will be.
Correct.
So what does this aim to do? Aims to take care of those people who they don't think can take care of themselves. What does it actually do? Puts them out of work.
Yeah, puts them out of work, exactly.
It's just beyond comprehension. All right, a little lighter case here. Everybody's heard me talk about our consumer warrior, Clark Howard, our neighborhood save your money guy. We all love him to death, and he comes up with some wonderful things. And I always give him full credit for what he did. But he took a survey the other day in various areas. Because he lives here, I think it was the four he picked out are from, three of them are from Florida. But he said, how much is enough to retire? And Mark in Florida said, $4 million. I'm 70 and plan to live 20 more years. My wife is 60 and should live 30 more years. I have more than that now, but who knows what illness or calamity could befall us, and we need to be prepared. That guy is prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Very well prepared. Congratulations to Mark in Florida, wherever you are. Then there's David in Florida, $80,000 per year. I'm 87 and my wife is 84. And in addition to living expenses, each year we like to send our children and their spouse all together on a 2 to 3 week tour to different places. What are you living on?
I wish I was his kid.
Awesome. But if you can figure out an $80,000 income, you can live better than that by not throwing away money on your kids. Nothing personal, my kids in here. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. The third one is Stacy in Iowa. My wife and I just retired at 54. We have a brand new house on our dream 25 acres, $3.5 million in the 401k, and we want to live on $100,000 a year. And we're in this position all because of Clark. You made it.
Yep.
That my quick head math said they're good.
That 80,000, not including it's 2 million in savings, not including Social Security. So
This is probably on pensions and that kind of thing anyway. Yeah. But still, that's the equivalent net worth, is
right.
What we like to call it. All right, but my best stayed till last. It's Mike in Florida. Not enough money in the world because I want to live forever. Sorry. But I don't want to be the richest guy in the graveyard. Mike gets my vote. I really like that.
Well, they found some pretty well-prepared people. That must not have been a random sampling of Florida's population.
No, I suspect this was carefully culled out of a lot of surveys. You probably know the extent of my admiration for Bloomberg, right? He does, obviously, because of the laugh. I love it when Bloomberg lays an egg. And I call him the mother hen because he's forever laying an egg. He and his minions in the company. How about this one? A raise for seniors won't do inflation fight any favors. So he is upset that seniors are going to get a Social Security increase that, as of this writing, was estimated at 8.9%. It's probably going to come in a little less than that, as I said earlier. But he said, you give them all that extra money, and they're going to go out and spend it and fuel inflation.
Those, what are they thinking, those peons?
I tell you, you old people, you and I got to talk. I would have spent it, and I will if they actually come through with the raise. I'll spend it on doing things like, I'll probably waste most of it on groceries and property taxes.
I bet a lot of people might catch up on their electric bill.
Oh, they might do that too. Hey, how can you twist something like this to be this negative? Get inside Mike Bloomberg's head, I guess, and maybe the answer will be there. There should be plenty of room to go hunting in there. What a strange individual. As long as we're on stupidity, 120,000 people had their data leaked by the Internal Revenue Service. Let's see. Of all the parts of government, whose data should be the most secure? I'm voting for IRS on this one.
Yeah.
120,000 people. Now, it won't affect most of you. That's the good news, but it will affect some of you, and that's the bad news. There's an IRS form that many of us know about called 990T, and it has to do with a concept called unrelated business income. So if you have partnerships in your investment accounts, that kind of thing, this will happen. But it's also used for nonprofits. And what happened because a nonprofit is forced to make public its 990T, which I think in general is a very good idea. So IRS published a bunch of this, and oops, they included with it the personal information of 120,000 Americans. They have since taken it down. Thanks. That's good. Wonder who was watching and got it. So they have a few little reminders. One, beware of phishing emails. That's the PH kind of phishing, which you can usually tell. You just don't respond to things that you don't trust or don't know. Keep an eye on your banking statements and for unusual transactions. That's a real good one. In fact, there's more of that. Use two-factor authentication for your online accounts. Check have been PWNED, whatever that means, and check it for your email address. Create strong passwords. That's good. Always have a trusted antivirus program. That's good. But I've got my own that this guy didn't think about. Get a personal PIN from the IRS. All you have to do is go to their website and search for personal protection ID PIN number. Once you get that, nobody else can talk to the IRS for you without that PIN. So if you want to give it to your CPA or something like that, you can. But if anybody tries to steal your information, it won't work. Get a PIN. We can all get them. We'll see you next week. Thanks. It was great fun. And this is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.